We're going to have our reading now. Thank you for doing that. We're going to hear the story of Rahab and the spies again. Then Joshua sent two spies with orders to go and secretly explore the land of Canaan, especially the city of Jericho. When they came to the city, they went to spend the night in the house of a prostitute named Rahab. The king of Jericho heard that some Israelites had come that night to spy out the country. So he sent word to Rahab, "The men in your house have come to spy out the whole country. Bring them out." Some men did come to my house," she answered. "But I don't know where they were from. They left at sunset before the city gate was closed. I didn't find out where they're going, but if you start after them quickly, you can catch them." Now, Rahab had taken the two spies up onto the roof and hidden them. The king's men left the city, and then the gate was shut. They went looking for the Israelite spies as far as the place where the road crosses the Jordan. Before the spies settled down for the night, Rahab went up to the roof and said to them, "I know that the Lord has given you this land. Everyone in the country is terrified of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the Red Sea in front of you when you were leaving Egypt. We've also heard how you killed the two kings east of the Jordan. We were afraid when we heard about it. We've all lost our courage because of you. The Lord your God is God in heaven above and here on earth. Now swear by him that you'll treat my family as kindly as I've treated you and give me some sign that I can trust you. Promise me that you'll save my father and mother, my brothers and sisters and all their families. Don't let us be killed." The men said to her, "If you don't tell anyone what we've been doing, we promise you that when the Lord gives us this land, we'll treat you well." Rahab lived in a house built into the city wall, so she let the men down from the window by a rope. "Go into the hill country," she said, "or the king's men will find you. Hide there for 3 days till they come back. After that, you can go on your way." The men said to her, "We'll keep the promise that you've made us give. This is what you must do. When we invade your land, tie this red cord to the window you let us down from. Get all your family together in your house." She agreed and sent them away. When they'd gone, she tied the red cord to the window. The spies went into the hills and hid. The king's men looked for them all over the countryside for 3 days, but they didn't find them, so they returned to Jericho. Then the two spies came down from the hills, crossed the river, and went back to Joshua. They told him everything that had happened and then said, "We're sure that the Lord has given us the whole country. All the people there are terrified of us." And that's from Joshua chapter 2.
Well, some good news for those of you who said you like watching TV, because I'm going to start off by showing you a very short clip from one of my favourite films, which is called Johnny English. And in the clip, we see Johnny English, who's a spy, and his fellow spy, Lorna Campbell, and they're trying to get into a castle that belongs to an evil Frenchman, Pascal Sauvage, and he is plotting to seize the throne of England and turn England into a great big prison camp. So Johnny English had found a way into the castle. Did anyone work out what way he had found of getting into the castle? Go on then, Martin, yes. Up the toilet pipe, that's right. As a matter of fact, that's how an awful lot of castles were captured in the Middle Ages, by people climbing up the toilets. but hopefully not when they were being used. Okay, and so there's no prizes for guessing what is about to happen to him. But would anyone like to guess who got him out of the mess that he was in, literally? Yes?
Was it that woman that found the ladder?
Yes, it was that woman who found the ladder. Because while Johnny had decided this was the best way into the castle, she had noticed that a few feet away, there was a ladder which got her up in much better state than he did. So she rescues him when he gets to the top and sort of cleans him up a bit. Now, here's a really difficult question, because it requires thinking or knowing what's in my mind, which I wouldn't wish on anyone. But did anyone see a connection between the little clip from Johnny English and the Bible story that Amanda read to us about Rahab and the spies. Cameron.
They both had spies in them.
Good. They both had spies in. Anything else, James?
They were both in castles.
They were both in castles or fortified places. Yes, very good. And Matthew, anything else that they had in common?
They were both about to spy.
They were both, that's right, they were both on a secret mission which involved getting into somewhere that was really hard to get into. And but one or two other things as well, because they were both stories, yep, about top secret spying missions, both missions that nearly ended in disaster. Now, we don't know anything about the spies, the two spies that Joshua had sent into Jericho. We don't even know their names. So we don't know whether they were dreadfully incompetent, like Johnny English, or whether they were just unlucky. But either way, Jericho counterintelligence was onto them and had them cornered in Rahab's house. So like Johnny English, they very nearly came to a sticky end. And also like Johnny English, the person that rescued them from looming disaster was a woman. Now, in those days, men were considered to be much more important than women, and children were even less important than women. Oh, those are the days. So I guess it could have been a little bit embarrassing for the spies that they had to be rescued by a woman. And not only that, Rahab wasn't a particularly important woman. She apparently wasn't married, because when she asked the spies to save her, she said, save her mother and father as well, and her brothers and sisters and their families, but she didn't make any reference to a family of her own. And so she probably didn't have lots of children either, which was one way of improving your status in those days if you were a woman. So it's also possible that she was quite young. And even worse than that, as far as we can tell, she wasn't a particularly good woman. For a start, she seemed to be very good at lying. She carried it off perfectly, told the king of Jericho's men quite a brazen lie, which they believed. And as far as her job goes, well, it is possible that she was an innkeeper, but most translations of the Bible identify her occupation as prostitution. They call her Rahab the prostitute. In fact, when people like me were little, she was known as Rahab the harlot, which means exactly the same thing. I can remember when I was about 10 years old, my Uncle Colin dramatically telling me the story of Rahab the harlot. He was rather shocked that my parents hadn't told me, but I think I know why. Of course, I was only 10. I didn't have a clue what a harlot was. But fortunately, I somehow sensed that it wouldn't be a very good idea to ask Uncle Colin to explain. So, in that case, what was so different about this young, unimportant, not very good woman? When the walls of Jericho fell down, we all know the story where the Israelites marched round and round for 7 days, and the walls fell down and the city was captured, and all the people from the king downwards were killed, except for Rahab and her family. They were the only people in the whole city to be saved. And she went on to marry and have children, and their descendants became part of God's chosen people, the Israelites, even though they weren't Israelites by birth. But everybody in Jericho was terrified of the Israelites. We heard Rahab say that to the spies. So why was it only Rahab and her family who were saved? Well, I think the answer is that Rahab thought. All the other people in Jericho were flapping around in great fear like headless chickens, just hoping that their thick walls of their city would save them, and perhaps the Israelites wouldn't manage to capture their city. So while this flapping was going on, Rahab thought, very coolly and calmly, that there must be a pretty powerful person on the Israelite side. So because she thought, She then went a step further and she believed. She believed, excuse me, she believed as she told the spies that the Lord, your God, is God in heaven above and here on earth. That was the conclusion she came to. And then finally, she acted. She had to make a decision, a very snap decision, whether to hide the spies and be on their side, or whether to tell the king of Jericho's men and be on their side. It was a huge risk, because if she'd got it wrong, she and her family would have come to an even stickier end than the spies. Just supposing Joshua and his Israelites hadn't been able to take the city, and the king of Jericho found out that she was a traitor, then it would have been most unpleasant. But she decided that the Israelite God was the real one, and she acted to make sure that she was on the right side. Well, the Bible calls this process of thinking, believing, and acting, the Bible calls that having faith. Now, a small boy was once asked what faith meant, and he replied, it means believing in things that don't exist. Interesting enough, one or two of the people who were protesting about the Pope's visit a few weeks ago also said faith was believing in things that didn't exist. But in fact, it isn't. Faith isn't believing in things that don't exist. It's deciding, once we've looked at the evidence, and then sticking with that decision, even if we can't see the whole story. The Bible calls it being certain of things that we cannot see. Because unfortunately, it would be nice if we could go into a chemistry, chemistry lab, put on our white gowns, get some test tubes, shake a few chemicals around and say, aha, God exists, or God doesn't exist, and this is the proof. But it isn't like that. So at the end of the day, the evidence can only take us so far, and everyone has to have faith. They either have to have faith that God exists, and that he wants to be our friend, and that he sent Jesus to save us, and so on, or that he doesn't exist, and that none of those things are true. Now, sadly today, most people don't even get as far as the first step. They don't even think. It's not that they've considered carefully whether God exists and decide that he doesn't. They just don't think. So as a result, they put their faith in just the things that they can see and touch and buy, the things that sort of hit you in the face if you don't see them. In fact, things a little bit like Matt asked you to admit to in the activity earlier on. So there were the people that went for computers, who spend most of their time on computers, and obviously that's important to them. Those who live for work and school, and those that live for their friends. Those that live for TV, and I was particularly impressed by the small band of people who live for housework. I'm very impressed that Ben was in there as well. Where's he gone now? He's probably doing some housework at this very moment. Now, don't get me wrong. We're not dissing any of these things. We're not saying that they don't matter. Of course, it's important to have friends. It's important to go to work or school. Well, if you can't get out of it, that is. It's important to do the housework and so on. But the trouble with all these things is not that they're not important. It's just that when we die, then they die too, as far as we're concerned. We may have the perfect house, like Jo, who spends 40 hours a week cleaning her house. It may be spick and span, but when she's sadly no longer with us, then her tidy house won't do her any good, and I guess probably, knowing the rest of her family, it wouldn't survive long either. So it's not a very good idea to put our faith in these sorts of things alone. But Jesus, on the other hand, offers us a life that is much greater than us. A life that will go on forever, even when we die. So let me leave you with a challenge. If you've never got round to thinking about God before, why not start to do this now? Now, if you'd like some help, there's an Alpha course running. It's only just started. And that's designed to help you think through whether you think that the Christian faith makes sense or not. I say I would say just turn up tomorrow if you wanted to join. Hopefully I'm allowed to say that. But it is only the second session, the second full session. So if you wanted to come along, I'm sure that would be fine. You get a great meal. You don't have anyone preaching at you like me. And as I say, you get a great chance to think about whether the Christian faith makes sense or not. Or if you don't want to do that, you could ask your BB or GB leader or your Light Factory leader or the youth ministers or just one of your Christian friends. Ask them why they think it's worth putting their faith in Jesus. And one last thought from the story of Rahab. Anyone can put their faith in Jesus. Like Rahab, you don't have to be important. You don't have to be rich. You don't even have to be good. Like Rahab, you don't have to come from the right tribe or the right country. She didn't. She came from one of the enemies of the people of Israel, but she was still able to have faith. And it doesn't matter whether you're the biggest brain box alive or, like Johnny English, the biggest idiot alive. What matters is not so much you, but who or what you decide to put your faith in. It's who you decide to trust that matters. And faith in Jesus is open to everyone. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the story of Rahab, how she saved the spies, and in turn, how she was saved and became part of God's people. Thank you that you still save people today. Thank you that anyone can put their faith and trust in you, whoever they are. Thank you that you welcome into your family everyone who puts their faith and trust in Jesus. Amen.